Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dual Screens podcast, sponsored by Melted Pins and the minds behind the adventure games by Patrick Hickey Jr. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, each and every single week, without fail, even when he has the flu, but he doesn't have it this week, it's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
So McDonald's Japan just added a dessert called Otana Cream Pie.
Mm-hmm.
Which translates to adult cream pie.
Interesting.
So there's that.
Now, I have so many questions. I have so many questions.
Do you?
Yes. Could this mean...
Is the first one house from going to Japan? To have an adult cream pie?
Now, does the marketing campaign spiff off of Odonna from Richie Valens?
I don't think the Japanese, they don't think that way. I think it was just...
Oh, Tana.
Get your adult cream pies.
Tana. And with us is a man who I, before we started recording, could was just destroying his name because I
you
am
weren't
a stupid
that
idiot.
Bad. You weren't. Well, you are, but still.
So I am going to let him introduce himself, and then so you could hear, compare and contrast how you're supposed to say his name and how I destroy his name for the rest of the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm Gonçalo Monteiro, and I'm from Portugal, Lisbon, and that's excellent. It. I'm here as a developer.
So my terrible pronunciation is going to be Gonçalo, and I've been told that that's okay, so that's what I'm going to say, so do not write me hate letters, everybody out there. Welcome to the show, man. I appreciate you joining us. We're very excited to have you on.
Great.
For those of you that are new to the Dual Screens podcast, this is an interview show where Andy and I bring on an industry guest to tell us their story and whatever fun project they might be working on. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, voice actor, whatever, they have a story to tell, and this is their platform to do so. The Dual Screens podcast posts each and every Thursday on your podcast service of choice, including iHeartRadio and Spotify, and you can also find us on YouTube. And of course, everything we do on dualscreens.com. Please, if you use Apple Podcasts, consider leaving us a review. It helps the show out tremendously. And if you leave us a review, we will read it out loud on the shows. And that's right, I said shows. Why? Because on this very feed, we also have other shows. On this same feed, every single Monday, we have the Dual Screens Gamescast, which is a new show that pits the best news from Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft against each other and declares the biggest winners and losers. That posts, like I said, each and every Monday, but we also record that live on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/dualscreensstreams. That's twitch.tv/dualscreensstreams. And of course, we started at our first of our four seasonal shows. So this is going to be running for the next 14 weeks, really. It's every other week, and that's Andy Explains It All, a show where Andy explains a topic that he's very passionate about to me, who knows nothing about it. And we just had our first episode. It was all about Stephen King, so it was a really fun episode. And, of course, those are going to post every other Friday, starting this past Friday on the, what was that, the 10th? I believe it was the 10th. Yep, it was the 10th. You could support us on Patreon, which none of this is possible without you. So go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler. We cannot continue to grow. We cannot continue to take on more shows, and we cannot continue to go to more events. Speaking of events, Andy, we did it. We got approval.
Well, we made it.
We are going back to PAX East, covering it as media. That's right. Dual Screens is returning to PAX East. Boston, February 27th through, I believe, the 1st of March.
March 1st, yes. Mm-hmm.
We will be there. We will be covering it. We're going to be interviewing. We're going to try and interview at least 10 more guests, more devs than we did last year. That's our goal. We want to really hit it and go crazy. I think
we did
last
a lot
year,
last year,
we
too.
Did 29 last year.
Yeah.
So I want to beat that this year. I want
sure.
to do it.
Let's
I think we
it.
Can. I think we can. Now
Let's
that we're a well-oiled machine.
We'll be fine.
Yeah. 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 All right. So that's going to get us right into the show. Let's just get right into it. Gonçalo, who are you and where? What is this game you're working on? So Massive Galaxy came across our Twitter sphere or whatever. It looks super interesting. And so we just kind of clicked around. We found you and we said, hey, why don't you come on and tell us your story? So here you are. So what is Massive Galaxy and who are you?
Well, Massive Galaxy is it's a mixed genre. So it's a point-and-click adventure mixed with space trading games. So which means it's I try to mix between the classic point-and-click adventures like, I don't know, Monkey Island. I'm not remembering any more recent games, but the old LucasArts games, Sierra games like Space Quest, and I mix them with Space Train, which means something like Space, like Star Citizen or EVE Online, where you can travel between systems. So, and everything with a pixel art look. So basically, I try to mix the both genres, and that's it. You're a trader. You go on an adventure, but apart from the single storyline, you can also just travel around, trade, and fight along the systems that you have available. So yeah, that's it. Massive Galaxy, basically. It's a bit hard to describe because it's not a traditional point and click, but at the core, it's a point and click adventure game with more stuff. Now, the exploration.
Now you said that you could fight. Is that what you said?
Yeah. There's a part of with turn-based combat. Means that when you travel around, you have to have that mechanic, because if there's no drawbacks to trading, you just travel around and make millions. So thing is, there's always a risk reward to it. So when you travel around, some things happen. And at the moment, I'm actually redesigning the combat.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make it more interesting. And yeah, at the core, it's a point and click adventure with the space trading part. And just to mention, I'm also developing a second game, which is called For the Warp. I'm not sure if you've heard about it.
For the Warp?
For the Warp. It's actually going to be released earlier because it's a more early access. It actually was a part of Massive Galaxy, to say the truth. So Massive Galaxy was slowly becoming bigger and bigger, and actually removed a small part of the Massive Galaxy and made a standalone game.
Yeah, so, I'm taking a look at it now.
It
was too massive. Yeah, it's one of the problems. I've been developing this for 4 years now, more than 4 years. So the scope quickly has gone out of control. And what I'm trying now is like closing the scope. I've separated the other mini game and mixed some card based mechanics and created another game set in the same universe. But I'm trying to release those two games. Wow. One is much, much smaller, which is For the Warp. Massive Galaxy is a bit bigger.
Now, and, are you doing this on your own?
As a designer and coder, yes. But I've got art. I have an artist.
You outsource and some freelance.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah. Most of the art is done by Kirkaz, which is from Peru, and my main audio guy is from the UK.
So is this where everything started for you, or did you come from some other company, or did you do other projects before this? What was the life before Massive Galaxy?
I was a regular developer, web developer. I studied computer engineering and worked for some years. I'm not that young. I'm already on my late 30s.
Whoa. What do you
mean? Sounds a lot like us. So
sure. I know.
You are young.
Some people expect. Yeah. That's the thing. Well, some people expect me to be like early 20s, and that's not true. But I've worked several years for companies and actually had the opportunity to make some casual games, just web games, stuff like that. And I always wanted to make my own games. I started with web-based games back in 2010, when there was basically almost no indie scene. With the indie scene stuff coming up, I started with Massive Galaxy, I've made several small games or game jams and stuff, but Massive Galaxy was supposedly the first commercial product, but I've separated the game, that little part, and made For the Warp. So I'm going to actually release both games, hopefully this year.
That's awesome. What
my background is basically programming.
Cool.
I would say.
So how long have you been in development of these two? Well, I guess this whole project, this total project of Massive Galaxy and For the World.
Yeah, I started 2015. So I worked around 2 years while working on my main job. So weekends and stuff. So, and starting 2017, I started almost full time. I still had some freelance jobs and up until today. So now I'm last year, I've been mostly full time with savings because I still have basically no income from the games, of course. And so that's it. I hopefully will release both games this year, 2020.
What came first, the name of the game or the name of the company? I'm just curious.
the game, actually.
You're like,
I'm from the time when people asked what they're going to name their studio. And people back like in 2010, I think they said, I just named the... give the same name of the game, of the first game. So you're going to save on marketing, and that's it. So actually Massive Galaxy exists as an idea since 2009, because it was supposed to be a web game. And I never released it. And I just kept the idea on the back. So, and I picked it up in 2015, and yeah, after 4 years, I'm still trying to finish it. And yeah.
Hold on, I'm doing a trademark now for the Warp Incorporated. Someone take that from you.
Really? I haven't really checked the latest game, but I don't. If I have problems, I'll just change your name. But
yeah, you'll be fine. I'm
so
sure.
So you're making very I mean, these are obviously they're the same universe. Were these inspired by games you loved to play growing up, or was this just, it just came to you out of the blue, like, oh, I want to make a space adventure whatever universe?
We are always influenced, of course. The old point and click adventures, the trade game, the space trading games like Elite, I don't know if the first ones, I'm sure. Not talking about the more recent. Even like the game Freelancer, I don't know if you know, it's a bit later, from Microsoft. And yeah, those were the main inspirations from games like Flashback, Another World, also because the way the character looks and walks, it's more similar to those games like Flashback and Another World. And while keeping, I think the main inspiration in terms of the pixel ratio and scenario would be Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, and which is I think the second or third Indiana Jones games from LucasArts. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. It was a big influence, but more in terms of aesthetics, in terms of how the game should play. And then I was influenced by a lot of games, of course. It's not something you just came up with. And For the Warp, for example, is very based on deck-building games, the board games, and the latest games that have been released, like Slay the Spire and others. And I just added what I add as a mini game on Massive Galaxy, mixed up those mechanics, and made a standalone game, basically. So, yeah.
What allowed you to go to commit to this as a full-time project? Because you were saying how you just went over the last year, it's now a full-time endeavor for you. What was the thing that made you say to yourself, okay, now I have this checklist that I have, you know, basically pulled off, and I can now go full-time on this project? What was the trigger for that for you?
What was the trigger? Well, first I just have to check the numbers if it's possible. I'm not going to just give up my job to do this, of course.
Right.
If I have enough savings and other factors. Basically, I was just saving along these years. And I always had the idea to make my own games. And I quickly discovered that without working full time, I would probably never finish most of these projects. So, the thing is, I quickly discovered after 2 years that I either go full-time or almost full-time on these projects, or it's going to take a long time. It still took a long time, but it's now more feasible to release games. And well, if they don't have any financial return, I'll just get back to the job market.
And you haven't gone through, you didn't go through any sort of crowdsourcing or anything like that to see if you can get some funding for this on your own, it seems, right? Like, this is just something you're looking to just get into early access and maybe make a couple bucks from that and then continue to improve the game. Is that your goal here?
Yeah, well, the other game, the Forward Warp, is clearly early access, but Massive Galaxy is not the time of game to be early access, so it's different. So while Forward Warp is already released on itch as an early access, and it's going to be on Steam on early access, and Massive Galaxy is going to be a final release. No, I think it doesn't work for story games like that. So Forward Warp is more, most of the games, deck building games, add that model. So
you need it for like balancing and stuff like that, and
getting
more feedback from the players and whatnot. Yeah, I totally get that. So I do want to ask you about developing video games in Portugal, because we're in the States where everybody and their mother is making a video game in their basement, and it seems like everybody has their own story that of how they got into it and everything like that. What is the development scene, specifically the AAA versus the indie video game development scene in Portugal?
Yeah, well, the thing with Portugal is that there's basically no gaming industry. It's very small. There are no AAAs. There are some studios that do work for AAAs, but you can almost pick them by the hand. Like, the whole country is like less than 10 big companies dedicated to games. But the indie scene has grown up a lot, like in the last 3-4 years. So we have like indie game events, and the fact that we are in Europe, it's of course a lot easier to bring people from Europe here, it's grown a lot, the indie scene here, but it's still very small, and most people are doing games by their own. There's no funding, even the getting a publisher, it's very hard because they're not all good examples of Portuguese developers getting funding, even from a publisher or something like that. So there are some good cases, but we still hadn't had a indie hit, I would say, or a very good success. We got one or two companies that do make, for example, we have a branch here from Miniclip, which is not a Portuguese company, but it's most of the development team is here, but it's not a Portuguese-born company. Gotcha. So, yeah. It's still very early, so here the industry.
Do you think it's just a matter of it's a young industry there, or do you think that there are systems in place to make it more difficult for some reason?
Oh, there's the lack of systems in place, I would say.
Okay.
Because, for example, if you want funding, there's like a boom here on tech companies, but if you're talking about games, forget about it. It's not gonna happen. So
there's definitely some information I could give you as to the fact that video gaming is the biggest entertainment industry on planet Earth.
Yeah,
such a people don't know the business.
Yeah, the thing is, people don't know about that. Even the government, I think, that it doesn't recognize video games it doesn't recognize video games. That's it.
Almost, legitimate? Like, it's just not legitimate.
Sounds like my mom.
it's like it's like they don't even try to fit it on the tech part or even the entertainment part. Then there's just no recognition. But I wouldn't say that would be the main problem. But the problem, it happens everywhere. It's like most of us are indie developers, small teams, and so like everywhere else, now it's even harder to make a game sell. So that's it, I would say. And of course, it's a matter of time. I think there are more companies coming. We have a couple of good examples of companies coming here to Lisbon, but it's still very early, I would say.
Go ahead, Andy.
No, Zay, what would it take for the government to say, hey, this is a viable career path we should be investing in and taking seriously? Because you look all over the globe, you can see success stories almost everywhere you go. And gaming rakes in more money than movies,
as a whole, film, and television, film and music combined.
But
that's what we try to tell. But the fact is that here in Portugal, I think the industry is very small, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
There's no local market. Basically, we are like a 10 million people country. So
so you're thinking there, you think that the issue might be that they're thinking on a national people in your country buying your product, as opposed to it being a global thing where you'd actually be out, you know, exporting your product across the world. That's interesting.
That would be, you know, there's several factors, but for example, while you have like most of the European countries like Spain, UK, Germany, a lot of funds, a lot of I would say associations that help developers, there's nothing like that in Portugal. There are some things going on in the last couple of years, but nothing that could even help financially any smaller developer. Mm. Nothing like that. I do think it will come up eventually, but not right now.
I would imagine that you and other indie devs are very close with each other, given how the lack of support from like the overall, I guess, atmosphere in the country, and just knowing that your career path isn't taken as seriously as it should be, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a common theme around your developers. But sure. But to be fair, most of the people that want to be successful, at least working for AAAs, they have to go to another country. But since we are in Europe, it's very easy for people just go to Spain or UK or Germany or France to work. So I think that because if anyone is even mildly successful, he can just hop off to another country in Europe. Mm. And that's what usually happens here. So I would say that. Yeah, but the community is very cool. I think it's smaller, but everyone knows each other. So I think it's very, in that regard, we have a lot of positives about that.
Yeah, that's nice.
I feel like there's a lot of untapped potential there. Like you have a hotbed of creativity that's not given. They're not being fed, you know. Like you're not fostering this environment, and so you're losing these creative people. I feel like a big company like EA would be remiss to open up a minor studio to do, you know, put out a couple of games every now and again. Like you see it now. You see, you know, EA has expanded, Activision has expanded, Ubisoft has expanded. Maybe like Microsoft and Sony, not so much, and maybe not Nintendo, but like some of those AAA publishers that don't also make their hardware, they're out there. They have smaller studios in more remote places. I feel like that would be, an option to go to someplace and say, hey, there's a lot of talented people here that unfortunately don't get the opportunity because of the way that the system is kind of set up for them. So they're all leaving to go other places. But what if we just kind of make a little studio here and, you know, maybe fund it from outside, not rely on public funding or government help, and just kind of, you know, set up camp with a little studio. I think that would be a pretty cool option. Has anybody tried to do that in the past? Is that anything you've ever heard of possibly happening anywhere else?
It's already happening. Like one or two companies have appeared out of nowhere, I would say, here in Lisbon. And with some funding, but it's still very, like, you can pick like two examples from last year. That's it. So we're a small country, but it's slowly becoming. I think the dream would be like a AAA, creating a studio here, which would bring a lot of, I would say, knowledgeable people here, because as far as I know, like half of the very good developers that wanted to work on games actually just left the country. It's the reality of it. But I think they're slowly coming. We are slowly having good examples. So it's not something that doesn't exist. But
you know, it kind of reminds me of game development in New York City, actually. And I know that might sound weird, but like New York City has, what is it, 14 million people, Andy? Something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Like we have 14 million people, but there are no tax incentives for studios to do work here. So the only studio really that I could think of off the top of my head that is here, and it's mostly, it's not even like the ones that do the actual development work. It's mostly, I think it's the advertising and the like tax division and like accounts payable, whatever the hell it is. But Rockstar has an office here. But I don't think there's an EA or anything else anywhere here, not even in New Jersey, really. Most of the people go down to Maryland, or they go across, you know, to California, or they're going to Toronto, or they're going to Oregon. But it's very similar to that. And I'm always wondering, why doesn't the government put together incentives to, you know, whether it be tax incentives or grants or something like that? Because there are so many people here that can make video games, talented. I mean, it's New York City. It's
right.
One and of the art capitals of the world and one of the tech capitals of the world. Like, people are here, you know, but
you
there's no
about,
games being made.
You think about the biggest success stories in indie gaming. Like, a lot of stories come out of Montreal or Canada, mm-hmm. or like Quebec.
Canada,
just huge, huge indie gaming scenes that the government just yeah. lends support to. And you don't hear a lot of like New York City based success stories, which is, we've met a ton of developers here that are so passionate and hardworking, but they don't get their dues, which is like, I think it just sucks in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, yeah. If I try to remember any New York developer, I can only think of one, which is an indie. It's Wajitai. He's a point and click adventure creator. So apart from Wajitai, I'm not seeing any New York developers.
I remember my buddy worked for, I think they were, what the hell were they called? Chaos Studios. They were the guys that made Homefront. Do you remember that game?
Oh, those games, yeah.
There was the two first-person shooters.
Here for them, yeah.
They made, he was on the team that made the first game, and then the second game was going so poorly, they eventually, like, shut the studio and moved development somewhere else. According to the internet, there are 13 New York City gaming companies. There's Jackpocket, never heard of it. Dots, never heard of it. Defiant Studios, apparently Zynga.
Familiar. Oh, Zynga, yeah.
Zynga is here. Riot Games, which I didn't know was here. I'm gonna look into that a little bit because that's weird. Rockstar, like I said, Avalanche. And Dream Sale. There might be a couple more here, but I don't know most of these. Oh, okay. Well, Dots does that game Dots and Two Dots, the mobile game. Defiant has no games. They list no games. They were founded in 2016. Zynga, we know Zynga. Riot Games does League of Legends.
Uh-huh.
But they're mostly headquartered in LA.
Yeah. Their headquarters are not on New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like Zynga. I think it's Silicon Valley, bro.
Yeah, Rockstar. I mean, Avalanche does Just Cause and Mad Max, so there's a, you know, an actual studio. But didn't they just close or get bought? Whatever. But they're a Stockholm-based company. There's Dream Sale, which I've never heard of the game they made. Games for Change. Herotainment, another game I've never heard of. Ink Stories, never heard of it, but oh, and the Longtail Studios, who made Rocksmith, was New York City based. But even so, I feel like New York City is a place where, like, EA, Activision, Ubisoft, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo would be there in some way,
yeah. Right?
And
maybe it's a thing of, like, it's probably expensive in New York in terms of having an office, and so that I think Portugal would be exactly the opposite regarding that, but. Yeah, I think it's more like culture. Like Silicon Valley has a lot of debt for tech companies, and I think New York ends up not having so much of that.
Mm.
So, tell us, Gonzalo, why is Massive Galaxy going to be the game that's going to make Portugal recognize how awesome games are? give us the play by play.
Well, it's I don't think I have an answer for that because it's like the big question. Yeah, who's going to put Portugal on the map? I'm not sure if any indie is going to make it. We would need like a big studio branch or something like that, because even indie, I'm not sure it's going to push the industry forward. It's not one or two guys even getting a very big. Success, it's not gonna change much, to be fair. So yeah, it's not on my hands, I think. But yeah, who knows? In 5 or 10 years, we can change the scene here.
You just need a PUBG. That's all. A simple PUBG, Minecraft, and everything will be fine.
So can you like kind of walk us through like a typical mission in Massive Galaxy? Because I'm reading up right now how you can be like a smuggler or a spy or just be a pirate. That's what I would be. So what's like the level of freedom you have in this game in terms of how you can approach missions?
Yeah, well, it's not, it depends. When you start the story, you have like, the storyline is very similar. It's like the same when you start, but after the first or second decision, you basically unlock the travel. So you just can travel around and it's up to you really. You can take up some missions, which are not story based, and missions are basically delivery stuff. And there are some opportunities for you to do illegal missions, and that's it. There's no. I don't have any. How do you say? Moral system, ethics system.
That sounds
like
my kind of game, right there.
No,
a game without morals or ethics.
Yeah, I don't. It's not. Maybe on the storyline, depending on your choices, the storyline, the part that the story is written. That may have some repercussions, some decisions, but apart from that, you can just trade around, and instead of trading with a cargo, you can just steal it or attack it or something like that. Yeah, but I think the focus of the game is not. I don't think the focus is on the multiple jobs you can have. It's more. I think the main focus would be just on the trading and on the storyline, which has a branching storyline, which is, I think, would be the biggest part of the game. But yeah. I don't have many. I don't have any decision which you just say, oh, I'm going to be a trader and just trade around. I don't think it's the kind of game which you choose a specific profession and just stick to it.
Are there like crews and stuff that you like recruit? Is it something like that, or are you just kind of by yourself?
Yeah, well, the part of the storyline, you do recruit a team to do the storyline part, but the part trading part of the game and combat doesn't have any crew part about it. Gotcha. Just the storyline.
So it sounds like I can be a total asshole and it's not going to matter. And I'm very excited about that.
You'll make some enemies,
to some extent.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I can just rob people and go about my merry way. That's what I'm getting.
You can have problems with the police. With the police, there's a specific faction, I would say, that acts as the police. So in the main systems, you'd have some problems with that, but it's not something that I focus on the game. It's not like on EVE Online, which is you have like several factions and security zones. It's not. It would be fun, but I don't have. I would probably not have the time to add all of those details to the game. So yeah, it's more open ended.
Can I rob the police?
well, no, you cannot rob the police. You can only fight or run. So you either destroy the police ship and get some scraps, or yeah, it's not that detailed.
Oh, Andy's going to run. He's a coward. He's going to run from them.
No, I'll fight. I'll definitely fight.
I don't know about that.
So you were saying how you reworked the combat system.
Yeah, it's like
from a previous. So what was the first iteration compared to what it looks like today?
Yeah, the first iteration I wanted to do a very simple system with basically like the Pokemon system of fighting. Very simple, just two actions. And the thing is, since you only have one ship, I found it very boring, basically. I would have to add more stuff to make it interesting. So I switched to another system, which looks like more like RPG, like a Japanese RPG type of combat. And this third iteration, I'm trying to mix something from For the Warp, which is the other game, which is just card-based. It's quite different. And I'm trying to make it less random, more, which you have more time to pick your attack. It's not going to be card based, but it's going to be something between what would be a card based game with very fixed stats of your attack and defense, and with the like Final Fantasy type of games, so something like that. I'm still deciding on that. It's going to be probably redesigned. I will probably redesign the whole stuff in the following months. So it's still probably one of the last things I'm finishing.
So, Steven, headline here, Portugal thinks Pokemon is boring. Let's get that
out
there.
Got it. Let's type that up real quick.
Start on there really
quick.
All
of Portugal thinks Pokemon is boring.
No. It's my personal opinion, because I'm not from the Pokemon generation, I would say, but I tried to implement something simple. But Pokemon, we have several Pokemons, and on my game we have one ship. So the thing, the tech thing, it becomes very boring with just two options. So two or three options, it doesn't work. So
a little mundane, just keep hitting the same button and seeing what happens. You know, there are some people who just train a Pokemon with a very powerful move and then just keep pressing the A button and just win every fight. So I get it. I get it. Yeah, even with the 800 Pokemon, it could still be a little mundane and boring.
I just walk mine out with the Pokeball now. So I do no real work to get to level up the Pokemon at this point.
You just get your steps in.
You get the step, get those KMs in, baby.
Yeah. So you're gonna go, as we mentioned, you're gonna do For the Warp. That right now is, it has a planned release date sometime in 2020. You said you're going to try and do that. Soon.
Yeah, it's both games.
Yeah, both games.
For the Warp is already released on itch as an alpha because it's a early access kind of game.
Okay.
So it's going to be released very soon on Steam on early access, in February, if everything goes
cool
according to plan. But Massive Galaxies take a bit longer because it's more story heavy, a lot of scripting, a lot of dialogues.
Right.
So, and actually I had to rewrite a lot of stuff last year. So they're in
the same, pardon the pun, Massive Galaxy. Are they tied story-wise in any way, or is it just they're just in the same universe?
Yeah, it's kind of, they're the same universe. For the War would be a prequel, but it's not supposed to have the same characters. You're not going to meet the characters, but you're going to meet some of the backstory, I would say. And you're going to meet the same species. For example, the couple of aliens are also appear on both games. I basically use the same universe. It would be easier for me. Also, I use the same pixel artists, which means that I think it fits. It fits making both games on the universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's like an awesome feeling, I feel, to come to the point where it's like, I can make two games out of this. This is just genius right now.
Well, it's a lot harder because, well, I'm just one guy as a programmer and designer.
True.
So
you just double yourself basically at this point.
Separating the game is actually delayed both games, so of course. But I'm trying to go with it.
Taking a look at the all the different sprite work and all that stuff, it looks really cool.
Yeah, so why did you land on pixel art for the aesthetic for this? Because I'm a huge lover of sprites. That's why I was kind of drawn to this game, to be honest. Anything with sprite work or pixels, I just fall in love with automatically. But why did you decide to pick this when designing these games?
Well, actually, I was looking for cyberpunk and pixel art stuff back in the day, and I've saw a couple of artists do that, which nowadays they are very popular now. I even more popular now, and actually some of them are actually doing cyberpunk games with pixel art. After I've started, so I immediately knew there was something there that I really liked, and even the pixel ratio and all the style, I quickly learned that I really wanted to make the kind of space game with a lot of planets and scenarios with that sort of style, pixel art style. And of course, I knew it would be possible if I did it in 3D or something like that. It would be even bigger scope. But what I discovered is that even with pixel art, it's a lot of work to make. I have more than 20 backgrounds, different backgrounds, and several animations, etc. So it's still a lot of work. That's why it took so much time. I basically already love pixel arts, and I kept falling in love with all the art styles and scenarios. And of course, a lot of the inspiration comes from science fiction, from books, etc. And I just started to replicate those ideas, the things that I haven't seen on games, but in pixel art form, I would say. And that's what I'm trying to do with Massive Galaxy.
Yeah, it just looks like a beautiful game because it's easy to dismiss the, like, oh, you're trying to get the nostalgia factor in with the retro sprites, but you can tell that there's a lot of passion in this project looking at it. It's not just kind of thrown together just to cash in on, you know, a trend from years ago. It's a lot of heart is in this, and you can tell by the animations and the level of detail, and it just looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's mostly I played some games and saw some, like, for example, I saw a lot of I would say, like, alien landscapes and stuff like that from a lot of artists. And the thing is, like, I wanted to play a game like this and travel around several planets, travel around the galaxy, seeing all these beautiful scenery, but with pixel art. And that was, I think, the main core idea that I wanted to bring to the game. And then I just build everything else up from there. So it's mostly a passion project. I don't think someone just starts developing a game knowing that it's going to take years, just think it's going to cash in on some trends. I don't think pixel art is a trend. I think it was some years ago when the first indie game started, but I think it's a style. It's a different style of art, and it's going to stay here. It's not
something. Yeah, I think most gamers nowadays can kind of tell when it's being used for the right reasons, because you can kind of see, like, when it's being used as, oh, a quick, like, oh, it's sprites, but there's no real heart to what you're seeing on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, the effort's just not there. But when you look at a game like this, you can tell that it's every little pixel was put there for a very specific reason, and it looks just like the end result matters to you and the artist.
That's the definition of pixel
standard, yeah.
Every pixel counts, and it depends, of course, the style of the artist. But even so, it's not, people think pixel art is easy.
Definitely not.
But the fact is that if I do a 3D model, it might take me some time, but after that I can just animate it and use all the angles. And with pixel art, each time I want to do that, it's going to take a lot of more work. And if I do it bigger, the resolution, which something that happened on For the Warp, I've increased the resolution mainly because of the UI. But if you have a background with double the width on resolution, it's four times the work. And if you add frames, it's going to be even harder. So it's not something that, it doesn't scale. Pixel art doesn't scale like 3D. So it's after, while it's going to take more work and more money, inevitably, to do a very detailed pixel art animation, for example.
You can tell, like, there are some games that use, like, asset stores and just buy, you know, pixel assets and manipulate them, and kind of, there's some game, I'm not going to name games, but there are some games where the different objects or the background and the foreground and the main character and the enemies, they don't have the same color palette. Sometimes they don't have the same style. They're kind of like a mishmash of different things. But you know, Massive Galaxy here, I mean, it all looks like it's coming, it's part of the same brushstroke, as it were. Everything kind of fits together in its cohesive artistic story, visual story that it's telling here, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, well, it's all original art, of course. There's nothing bought out. Everything is made mostly by Kirikazim. I've got a lot other... I made some art, some of the smaller stuff, not much, but for Massive Galaxy, I also had a second pixel artist that did like three or four backgrounds, not much. Mostly it's just Kirikazi, of course. And it's everything is original. So everything is planned out for design and, well, yeah.
So if all things go as planned, when can we expect these games to drop?
Okay. it's a very hard question. Well, I think because of the ways things are going, and I'm wasting a bit of more time than I was thinking with the second game, I think it's going to be during the summer. I'm trying to, if the delay is going to be bigger, I'm trying to maybe release a demo or something like that, something like which you can already see part of the game, a little bit of the game, because there's a lot of game that you can play already. and it's and taking so much so many years not and not showing that it takes well it, I really like to release something before the final launch, some demo or something like that. And yeah, maybe during the summer, to be realistic, late summer, August, September, maybe.
Cool.
But I promise now, nothing at the moment.
All right, you heard it here first, and write it down and hold them to it.
Actually, I've already failed that several times because one of the plans was to release on 2018, and actually I have some trailers that say that year still. And actually, I have no idea what to do with that. And if I bring those trailers down and put some up with the correct dates, but yeah, I have some trailers that show 2018. So yeah, I've already 2 years behind schedule.
Listen, if you were a Kickstarter campaign, it'd be a whole different conversation we have right now. You can set your own internal dates and push them back as long as you need to. No one's been yelling at you for like a refund. So I think you're fine. Take as much time as you need.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I thought about when because I in 2016 I was planning to do Kickstarter, but I discovered two things that if you stick to a date, yeah, it's gonna be hard. And the thing is, doing a Kickstarter in itself, it's a lot of work. It's months and months that you're gonna lose just creating and marketing a Kickstarter campaign. So yeah. I looked for a publisher some years ago, but at the moment I'm almost already finished with the game, so I'm no longer looking for a publisher, at least for the PC. So yeah, I don't have any I would say financial ties or promises related to release dates.
Are consoles in your future, or are you just aiming at PC for the time being for the initial release?
Well, PC at the moment. Consoles, if I do a port, maybe Switch, I'm not sure. But it will take quite time to release a port. It's not going to be easy. So yeah, just PC for now. I'm not promising any ports.
Excellent. Andy, do you have any more questions before we get into our rapid fire?
Oh, I have some fun rapid fire questions, so let's get into that as soon as possible.
All right. Let me tell you about our sponsors. This week, we have Melted Pins, as we have had for the last few months here. If you don't know what Melted Pins is, that is original tattoo art-inspired pins, buttons, canvas bags, stickers, all sorts of things by artist Kelsey Lin, who has done art for our podcast, has done art for websites and other podcasts all over the world, makes really, really interesting stuff. And if you want to support a small business and a true artist, then go to meltedpins.com. And if you find something you like, put it in the little cart there, and then you have a code that you could put in. And you ready? I'm going to whisper that code. It's NDS Melted. I didn't whisper it because I want you to know it. It's NDS Melted, and that's going to get you 10% off of your purchase. That's right. You can buy some really cool 100% original designs that, you know what? You wear it to school. Like if you're in school, you wear it to school, and you're going to be like, whoa, what is that? I've never seen that before. And you're going to be like, damn right, you never saw it before. Why? Because it's all original. It's 100% original. Kelsey Lin, before she takes over the world and she starts making art for everyone all over the planet, you get in there, ground level, meltedpins.com, NDS Melted, 10% off your purchase. And we are also sponsored by Patrick Hickey Jr.'s The Mind Behind the Adventure Games. This is a fantastic book. We've had Patrick on the show once for Patreon exclusive and once for the show proper, and he will be returning soon to tell us about this game, or this book. So The Minds Behind the Adventure Game are interviews with the cult and classic video game developers. It's featuring interviews with over 31 popular video games, including Grand Theft Auto, Strider, Maximum Carnage, and even Pitfall. Okay, this book gives you a behind-the-scenes look at all of the origins of these games, the people who made them. These are fantastic behind-the-scenes stories. Sometimes your jaw will be on the floor about how some of these games were made, how some of the biggest games that you could think of from the 80s and 90s were basically made in a bedroom with three people who are putting their entire life savings into something, and then it becomes you know, something like Strider or Pitfall or something like that. So you never know the different kinds of stories you're going to get here. And if you want to purchase this book, you could do in two places. You got patrickhickeyjr.com, and you also have Amazon. If you buy it from Patrick's website directly, he will personally autograph every single copy and send it to your home. It's pretty awesome. He's a pretty good dude. This is the second book he's done. He's also done The Minds Behind the Games, which is a general, and he's also got other ones in the works. I believe he's got a shooters game, and he's got a sports game that he's announced as well, a sports book and a shooter book. So, yeah, check that stuff out, and let them know that the boys at Dual Screen sent you. All right? Do that. All right, Andy, it's time for rapid-fire questions.
Yes, it is.
This is where we get to know Gonzalo a little bit better, where we are going to just ask him the things that come to our brain, things we want to know, the burning questions.
This will determine if we bring him back on the show or not.
Understood.
This is the make or break part of the show for the guest.
Yes. Interesting. Andy, would you like to start us off?
I think you should with the first and always, yes.
The first question and always the first question, Gonzalo. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Wow, Andy, you suck. You are so bad, Andy.
Shut up.
That's 8 for 8, bud.
Shut up. If you could disinvent one thing, what would it be?
Wow, that's a good question, Andy.
Wow.
I can't prepare this.
I'm going to crack open a drink for that one.
Yeah, you should.
Well, I'm only thinking of one thing right now, game related, Fortnite.
That's your headline.
I love it. Can Fortnite please go away? An interview. All right, I like it. What is your favorite cheese?
My favorite cheese, I'm not remembering the name. I would say the butter-like cheese. The Camembert something. Yeah,
Camembert.
Yeah. Yep.
Camembert. Yeah,
that's a good one.
That one.
If you were a pair of shoes, what kind of shoes would you be?
I have no idea. Pair of slippers.
All right,
that sounds very cozy.
Well, I've been working on home mostly in the past 3 years. So.
Some fuzzy slippers, just kind of chill out for a little bit. Do you like warm weather or do you like cold weather?
Warm weather. Mm.
What was the best thing before sliced bread?
Mm. You know the phrase, this is the best thing since sliced bread. What were they saying before sliced bread came around?
Well, in Portugal, we don't have that say. We do know that say, actually. But
is there a similar thing in Portugal?
Yeah, I'm not something related to that. I'm not remembering anything.
Hmm.
We have exactly the same say translated, but I think it was influenced by, of course, the American say. But I'm not remembering anything like that. I would say bread. Which is a stupid.
That is very smart.
That's an answer.
That is a practical man. See, we've learned something about you. You think logically.
Mm-hmm.
If sliced bread was the best thing.
I belong pizza. That's how I feel about that answer.
You're an idiot. favorite American movie?
Fight Club.
Ooh, your comeback on the show.
That's a good one.
I love you more than I did 5 minutes ago. Okay. Take a good look in the room you're sitting in right now.
Yeah.
How many pennies would you fit in that room?
Well, I don't know the size of an American penny. I do know the size of Eurocents, which is
how many Eurocents could you fit in that room?
Oh, I have no idea because actually I'm on the attic of my house, which is where I put up the place where I work, and it's because if it's the attic, it's quite large, because it's just the upper part of the house. So if I'm only count the part where I work, there's a small separation. I would say it's not that large, like. Oh, I'm going to say meters. Do you know what is a meter?
Sure, we can figure it out.
Yeah, why not? We'll learn.
It's 4 by 3 meters, so Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty big room. That's not too small.
Yeah, it's not that small. It fit quite a lot, but only recently.
So a lot because, would be the answer to that question.
Yeah, I moved last year, so I lived on a small apartment. It wouldn't fit much where I was back then.
This is going to be a two-parter question here. Have you ever been to the United States?
No.
Okay. If you were to go to the United States, what city is or town or state would you want to visit first?
First, New York, without a doubt.
Oh, he's going to come see us, obviously. Yeah. First stop.
That's it.
Who knows?
We're New York City's greatest export.
We are.
Something. I don't think we've ever been exported, have we, Andy?
We make quality content. No, this podcast has known following.
Actually, we do.
In the UK and all over Spain. So, that's a fact. That's a true fact. Would you rather look like a potato or feel like a potato?
But just a potato? Not a fried potato? Just a potato.
A potato.
Plucked out of the earth potato.
Yeah, it's plucked from the ground.
Come on, they feel horrible.
No, that's the question. Would you rather feel like one or look like one?
I would rather feel like one. Okay. Look like one.
I guess.
It's a hard question.
That makes sense. Oh, that's horrible. is breakfast cereal a soup?
Is the soup? Oh, come on.
Is cereal and milk soup?
It kind of looks like, if you think about it, it doesn't taste like soup. Yeah, you could say it's soup if you just ignore the fact that it's milk. Well, technically it's something floating in the liquid, but it's mostly water, so I would say it maybe. I wouldn't say no.
Andy.
What do you think about when you're alone?
Interesting. That's a very deep question. That's not a rapid fire there, Andy.
Well, you know, we can get deep a little bit. It's getting to know.
We are. We're getting to know our guest.
Well, first I would say game ideas would be the first thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the second would be traveling, I think. But yeah.
To New York, obviously.
New York, yeah.
Not necessarily the first, but yeah, sure.
Where's the first place you would want to travel if you could just pack your bag and leave tomorrow? Where's the first place you're going?
I don't know. Probably somewhere on Southeast Asia or Japan. Ooh. Or something like that.
Ooh, Japan for sure. It's a great country.
That's on my bucket list. I'd like to go to Japan.
Yeah. We should. Tokyo.
I went. My first country outside of Europe was Japan. Oh, I went there some years ago. Yeah, I'd love to get back there. Actually,
when things break, do you prefer to fix them or replace them?
Well, what are you thinking about? Software or hardware? Hardware as in art stuff. Because it's a different answer. For software, I think always to fix. But for hardware, yeah, it's replace. I'm not that good fixing stuff.
Hmm.
Physical stuff.
Interesting. Yes.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Nice. Yep. Need that jitter.
Describe yourself with one word.
With one word. I have an idea. Come on. No.
One word.
Sorry.
Can do it.
Yeah, I think the only answer I can come up with that could be interpreted in seriously bad ways. So I'm sorry. I have no.
You got to say it now. You can't just,
I don't know.
You can't walk it back.
Yeah, I think the only one would be okay.
Okay.
Which is okay.
I am okay. See, that can mean many things. It can mean that you find yourself to be moderately attractive, maybe not the most attractive. Also, that your mental state is that you are fine. You're okay. You're not panicking and you're not ready to crumble. And you're also not the greatest mood in the world. You're okay. Yeah. You're middle ground. I like it. I think that's fair answer. French fries or tater tots? And if you don't know what tater tots are.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
I don't know what that is.
French fries or potato chips?
Come on, potato chips. Okay, I would prefer French fries.
Yeah, me too. We got time for a couple more, Andy.
All right. If life was a video game, what would the first cheat code be that you would use?
I would use. I think I still remember one from Doom when I was a kid. It's IDDQD, and I think it even gives you invincibility or no clip. I'm not sure.
So you go for God mode, essentially.
Yes, yeah, like that. It's much easier. But yeah, let me just check on the web. IDDQD. It's always the thing I remember about cheat codes. IDDQD. Cheat code. God mode. Yeah, that's it.
God mode. I like it. I would always do the Sims monies code. Just spam that shit. It was at $60,000 every time you hit it.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue for the next obvious question, Steven.
Yeah, but actually, after God mode, I would prefer no clip. No clip is great.
Mm-hmm.
No clip is great because yeah, you could go anywhere.
So go anywhere. Interesting. So here's a very, very interesting question that we've asked all of our guests: invisibility or flight? Which power flight would you rather have?
Flight. See? Flight.
Yeah,
I dream of flying a lot. So yeah, flight.
Do you find there's any sort of moral conundrum with the power of invisibility?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I would say so.
That's not the question, though. We're not debating the moral aspects of the question.
No, but I think flight would be much better. But yeah, even flight can give moral issues. But yeah, invisibility does, of course. I think anyone that picks invisibility is thinking about some things. So.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Right, but God mode wouldn't, though.
Well, that's just protecting oneself from imminent death. That's all that is.
Yeah, God mode does kind of solve everything that you want. Yeah. Like the money thing, the whatever.
Flying, can help a lot of people.
Listen, if I was invisible, I wouldn't think I was a god. If I had something called God mode, I would think I was a god.
Would you be a virtuous god or would you be a vengeful god, Andy?
I would be a god of balance.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Thanos is what you're saying. You just want to snap half the universe.
I didn't say that. Okay, you said that. I would be a righteous god, a fair god.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So yeah, you get one. You get yours, and then we'll do the final one.
Would you rather have a third eye or a third arm?
Can I ask you a question? Why would I need a third eye? Is there any advantages that? Is it a special
eye?
Do you want to go with
the classic definition of a third eye? That it like is connected somehow to your soul or something like that?
Yeah, something like mystical stuff. Yeah, I would prefer the third eye.
Yeah.
Because a third arm, I'm not sure where I would put it.
I'm nervous about where it comes out of.
I was gonna say, as a programmer, having a third arm might come in handy.
Yeah.
Clickety-clackety, yeah. Make more, you know, make more happen.
Okay.
Do you wear glasses?
Yeah, at home, yes.
I was
going to glasses outside.
A funky pair of glasses you have to buy now with your third eye.
Nah, there's no guarantee that the third eye is also going to be have some sort of degenerative property.
It does.
So it's a mystical degenerative.
I see souls. I see blood,
it's a mystical soul. Eye that's also farsighted.
I see very, very blurry souls.
Right. I see the very blurry future and past.
And the final question.
I want to say, Gonzalo, coming on this podcast, your future is most certainly a little more blurry than it was an hour ago. But yes, the final question.
Yes, the final question. And as per tradition, you will be the eighth guest to have been asked this question. And it is a very deep and thoughtful question. So please do not rush to your answer, because the answer can make or break your whole career.
Wow.
Andy or Steven?
Guys, I barely know you.
Exactly. First impressions, most important impressions.
Yeah, unfortunately, I talked first with Andy, and understood. Then you. And understood. I know more you in terms of image because I haven't seen Andy's face, right. Of course. Right. But the thing is, I don't have any preference really, but probably the first one, Andy. So wow. I would pick Andy.
Congratulations. Sorry. Congratulations, Andy. That's your first clear victory.
Oh, but in terms of just to say, if I wanted to think more about it, I think Stephen is more, I'm sorry if I'm mixing. Stephen, you're the guy with two kids, right?
Yes.
Okay. I have one daughter, also 5 years old. So I would pick you, but yeah, on the first decision, I'd pick Andy. I'm not sure.
I like your explanation. I believe it. I think that...
He's trying to soften the blow.
No. The answer here is clear. The answer is that if I spoke to him first, he would have no question, but he would say me immediately. Because he wants to say me now, but he's afraid to hurt your feelings.
No, he doesn't.
So...
No, the thing is, I probably know more about Stephen's life because I have some similar stuff regarding you.
Right, and that's a little like your life. That's who wants
sympathy.
That?
Yeah, I get it.
I'm a more
sympathy, but
character.
Yeah.
I have a lot more to offer you.
Did you just say more character or more moral character?
We're not talking about morals right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's not true at all. All right, that is gonna bring us to the end of the show. Gonzalo, you are absolutely fantastic. We love having you on the show. We look
Thank
forward
you.
To continuing this friendship throughout your career. If you ever do come to New York City, you know where to look. We are here. We will hang out. We will take you out for a drink. All right. So let's get right into the little rigmarole here at the end. If you want to follow this show on social media or our whole website on social media, you could do so. We are at NDS Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And if you want to join our Facebook group, that's facebook.com/groups/DualScreensPodcasts. That's facebook.com/group/DualScreensPodcast. You could also go to facebook.com/DualScreens, and that's our kind of company page where you'll see a bunch of our stuff get posted there as well. But if you want to just hang out with each other, the Facebook group there, Dual Screens Podcasts, is the group for you. And if you want to follow Gonzalo and everything there, that's at Massive Galaxy. On Twitter. Is there anywhere else you want people to follow you? There's facebook.com/massivegalaxy, massivegalaxy.com. Is there anywhere else you want people to follow you and follow the progress of the game?
If you want to wish list, both games are on Steam. You can just search Massive Galaxy on Steam or For the Warp. Mostly Twitter. I'm not very active on Facebook, but yeah, okay. I do put some stuff there.
Awesome. And folks, if you want to watch our Twitch channel, we do stream a couple days a week. That's at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. If you want to buy some of our merchandise, you could do so at teespring.com/stores/dualscreenshop. That's teespring.com/stores/dualscreenshop. And of course, all of these links are going to be in the show description. Our theme song, Retro Chatter, is by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio, and Andrew Douglas, who does all of our podcast cartoon art and whatnot. You could follow him on social media at Angimoto. And thank you, of course, to Matt Murray, who is a contributing editor and contributing artist to the podcast as well. And folks, if you want to support us one more time, I'm going to give you that Patreon. That's patreon.com/NDS podcast. We need your help because we are going to PAX. We just basically drain the account so that we can get to PAX. But now we want to have better equipment while we're at PAX. So if you can support us for as little as $1, that gets you into our VIP Discord channel where you could chat with us, each other, and also our indie dev guests who hang out in there throughout the day periodically to chat and talk about the gaming news and all that fun stuff. You also get a bonus episode each and every month in which you vote the topic. There's also a $3 tier, a $5 tier, a $10 tier, a $25 tier, and then a $50 tier. And the $50 tier, of course, is our Patreon producer. And we want to thank you again, Colton the Apprentice Nestler. That's it. This has been yet another exciting installment of the Dual Screens Podcast. Andy, is there anything you want to tell our listeners before we go?
I could announce next week's guest.
Yes, please do.
We're having on Neon Deity Games, talking about Junk Puncher, which looks like an amazing NES game. Mm. like if you played Shatterhand before, those like side-scrolling beat-em-up games, it looks incredible, and I cannot wait to talk to those boys.
It's very exciting. Very, very exciting. Well, that's it, folks. Thank you, Gonsal. Thank you, Andy. This has been the Dual Screens Podcast. I am Stephen Fontana. Take care, and as always, please be excellent to each other.